So I think I'm going to ask Don to lock the door and make sure none of the men get out. What I thought I would do was discuss the Torah's view on women, and I'd like to define the role of women for you as the Torah presents it. Most of us are aware today, both men and women, that women's issues have been in the forefront for many, many years. Women are always grappling with where they belong in society. Which, should they stay home and be mothers? Should they be out there in the workforce? Equal pay, equal work. Those who are out want to be in. Those who are in want to be out. We really don't know where we belong, and you men don't help us. So what we have... So what I will do for you tonight is define the role of the woman according to the Torah. And some of you might ask, well, why should we get involved in this topic? We believe that the Torah is the Word of God, and whatever He tells us, we'll do. Why should we try to justify God's position? We know from the Torah that what a woman should do, and the question is this a concession to society if we discuss the topic? And I believe that the answer can be found in two words that the nation gave to Moses at Sinai. Na'aseh, we will do, v'nishma, and we will understand. In Torah, it really isn't enough to do God's commandments. We must understand them, understand how righteous and how just they are. And if we do them without understanding them, without understanding their righteousness and their goodness, we really are not fulfilling God's commandments. It's true that even if we don't understand them, we will do them because we know God is correct, and doing them is only one part. But understanding them is even more important. And so that's what my goal here this evening is, to help you understand exactly what our role as women is. But I want to state from the very outset that the Torah makes it very clear that women are not inferior to men, and men are not inferior to women. In Genesis 1:27, where the Torah speaks of man's greatest attribute, that of his mind, his intellect, it states, "And God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them." Both man and woman are totally equal when reflecting the image of God. Now, in my experience, I teach young women, and I come across not only the young women, but their mothers as well. And even in the Orthodox societies today, there are women that are quite upset. They feel the Torah doesn't treat them equally. There are many complaints, and some of the complaints that I hear are, well, we don't really think it's fair. Men seem to have so many more mitzvot, so many more commandments. Obviously, they take this to mean that the men are more important than the women. Some of the things that they complain about are the fact that only the men can be counted for the quorum of 10, for the minyan, when they need to pray. And so these women have gotten together, and they have made prayer groups where just the women get together on Saturday mornings to pray together as a group. Another complaint that I hear very often is, well, only the men can be called up to the Torah reading. And so they counter that on Purim with reading the scroll of Esther. The women get together, and together they read it as a group. And then they complain that it isn't fair, that only boys can have bar mitzvahs, big elaborate parties as they enter into the age of manhood at 13. And so the women have countered that with the bas mitzvah. When a girl reaches the age of 12 and she's eligible and she's at a stage for mitzvot, she has an elaborate party. But I think one thing that the women have been doing today that gets the men wild, because we've had boys come back from being in homes, yuppie homes maybe, or whatever you want to call them. On Friday evenings, it's customary to begin our meal with the sanctification of the wine, kiddush. And usually that's done by the man of the house. And that's followed by the benediction or the blessing over the bread. Now, what happens in some of these homes is they take turns. The man will do the kiddush, and the woman will do the motzi. Well, it is actually halachically correct, because whenever someone is obligated to do a mitzvah, if you're both obligated in the same mitzvah, then you can perform it for him, and he can perform it for you. So actually, halachically, There really isn't anything wrong with it. But it is a definite change from the way things were done in previous generations. Well, were the previous generations wrong? If according to halacha, a woman could recite the motzi, well, maybe we shouldn't look back to the previous generations. According to the Torah, no man is infallible. We go by halacha. Maybe they did make a mistake. However, it would seem strange to say that all previous generations made a serious oversight, all the way back to the prophets who reflected the ideas of Sinai. So maybe they knew something we don't know, and maybe we're the ones who are making the mistake. Well, I think what we have to do is get into the Torah, and let's take a look at the models of the man and the woman that we find in the Torah. I think the first question that I would ask is, was it only the men who were prominent in the Torah? Do the women have positions of prominence as well? After all, I don't think in our lifetime we're going to see a woman president in the White House. So on that score, if we compare the society of the prophets, we would have to say that the society of the prophets was far ahead of our society today. In our country, it's going to be a while until we get a woman in office. But 300 years after the death of Moses, Deborah was the ruler of all of Israel. She guided the people in halacha. She guided the people in philosophy, in teaching them a way of life. And she guided them politically as well. She actually was the highest person in office at the time. As a matter of fact, the Sanhedrin, the group of lawmakers in Israel, would very often come to her to discuss the judgments and would wind up following her advice on all matters. So we see that the Torah society placed a higher value on women thousands of years ago than our society does today. And now I'd like to take a look at a couple, the couple of Sarah and Abraham. And I'd like to look at their relationship. Now, those of you who are familiar with Peter 3 know that it says, "Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord." Okay. Well, let me give you my version. Okay. Now, you know that Ishmael, the son of Abraham, was growing up in their home, and now they had a little toddler named Isaac. And Sarah began to look at Ishmael, and she realized that this was not a child that she wanted growing up in her home alongside of Isaac. And so she came to Abraham and she said to him, "This boy has got to go." Naturally, Abraham was very upset. It was his son, and he wasn't quite ready to listen to Sarah on this point and just get rid of his child. But Sarah wanted him out. She knew better. And this was not a male-dominated home. It was not a chauvinistic home. In this home, Sarah voiced her opinion, quite emphatically, as a matter of fact. And although Abraham wasn't happy about this, nevertheless, he wasn't surprised that she expressed her opinion, because you know what? She had the right to do so. He respected her opinion, but he disagreed with her, and he was quite upset. After all, it isn't easy to ask someone to send your child away, especially since he didn't notice what Sarah noticed. And then they were lucky. They had a mediator. God said to Abraham, "Listen to Sarah." She, Rashi tells us, when God said to Abraham, "Listen to her voice," Rashi explains that that means listen to her prophecy. And Rashi goes on to explain that Sarah was a greater prophet than Abraham. So we don't get the impression from the Torah that this was a typical chauvinistic attitude that existed in their home. Now, people who don't study the Torah carefully often project the defects that they see in their society onto the Torah without making a careful examination. People assume that just as our society is developing slowly in terms of human rights, the same is true of a Torah society. We who believe in Torah know it can't be so. Torah is given by God and represents the ultimate society. And whenever such objections are made, we need to study the Torah to see how false they are. In Torah, no such concept exists ever. Every woman, listen up, is a free human being who can do as she pleases. She can marry who she pleases. Actually, she can refuse anyone. You can't force her to marry anyone unless she chooses. She can have any job or occupation, have her own business if she chooses. And she can dictate any conditions that pertain to her life. After marriage, subjugation is not allowed. According to the Torah, one person cannot subordinate another human being. Now, these aren't just theoretical matters. They are expressed throughout halacha. I like to call the ketubah a prenuptial. Ivana Trump was not the first one who got a prenuptial. To us, that's what a ketubah is. And you have the right, before marriage, to write in any conditions that you choose to. A woman's right in terms of outside matrimony or inside matrimony never take away her independence. There is a Torah law that a woman has the right to free herself from major matrimonial obligations by saying she wishes to be self-supporting and earn her own living. This isn't to say that there aren't obligations that each one brings into the marriage, but the independence of the partners is never infringed upon. Yet, when we return to the question of the role of the woman, some might raise the following objections. Yes, it's true, there was a Deborah. And yes, in her day, she was the leading person of the generation above all of the men. And it is true that Esther, in her time, had a whole scroll dedicated to her. She was the prime mover in the history-making epoch of her time. Mordechai, as a matter of fact, was in the background. She was the one who gave the mandate to the Sanhedrin in her time as to how the holiday of Purim should be celebrated. But, as I said, some people may object. While we have some women who stood out in their time, such as Esther, Deborah, Miriam, Sarah, on the whole, we mainly find the men in the foreground. True, we have the patriarchs and the matriarchs, but the matriarchs seem to have played a more passive role. As a matter of fact, while Deborah was the greatest in her generation, she nevertheless couldn't be part of the Sanhedrin. A woman cannot be part of the Sanhedrin. But since she was the greatest mind, the leader of the Sanhedrin came to her to gain access to her knowledge, and they pronounced the official judgments. Now, obviously, we're going to ask, why is this so? If, as I said before, Sarah was a greater prophet than Abraham, although she was a greater prophet, it was Abraham who was in the foreground. And I'm sure this is troublesome because I heard someone say this to me just this afternoon when we were discussing this. Now, the rabbis of the Talmud emphasize this point. When the three angels appeared to Abraham, we know it was Abraham who ran out to them. He wasn't well. It was very hot. He was an elderly gentleman, but he's the one who ran out and brought the people in. And after he settled them down and he fed them, they asked, "Where is your wife Sarah?" And his response was, "She's in her tent." This, the rabbis say, or think, was the symbol of her perfection as a woman, hidden in the tent, not visible. Women today object to this concept. They feel this is unfair. Why should Abraham be in the foreground and Sarah in the background? Are we consigning her to a lesser role? To understand the answer to the question, we must understand our society's goals and values as opposed to the Torah society. In our society, a major goal is success. Success and fame go hand in hand. But it's not just fame, it's ostentatiousness that our society really values. The successful person is the one who is in the foreground. We all watch entertainment tonight. Why? We want to find out how the rich entertain. We want to find out where they eat and where they party, what kind of homes they have, what kind of cars they drive. Why? Because this is what society says is the good life. This is how one has made it. But is this what the Torah considers to be a good life? In Genesis, we have the story of two brothers. We have Esau and we have Jacob. Jacob is described as a simple man, one who dwells in his tent. Sound familiar? Just like Sarah. Esau was a man of the field. Which was the outgoing son? Who was the successful son? Who was the one that wore the expensive clothing? Who was the one that supported the family? This was Esau. And who was the quiet one? The one who went unnoticed. The one who spent his entire day studying alone in his tent. This was Jacob. But I asked you, which one of the two does the Torah consider to be the true heir of the blessing that God gave to Abraham? Not the outgoing one, not the financially successful son, but the quiet one. Now what we see from this is that the Torah places no value on ostentatiousness. As a matter of fact, the Torah considers a person who is searching to be in the limelight as an individual with a defective character. Maimonides tells us that when the Sanhedrin was functioning according to the guidance of the Torah, they had great difficulty in recruiting members. Can you imagine a senator turning down the opportunity? Someone from the House of Representatives saying, please, I don't want it. But the really perfected people didn't wish to have this dignified position as a member of the Sanhedrin. They wanted to be away from the public eye, from being a popular, well-known individual. They wanted to live a quiet life, away from the spotlight of society, a private life where they could pursue the knowledge of God's Torah without being noticed or observed. When God appeared to Moses in the burning bush to give him the leadership of the Jews, to be the lawgiver, to take the Jews out of Egypt, do you think Moses jumped at this opportunity? On the contrary, do you know that they argued for 7 days? For 7 days, Moses said, no, I do not want this task. I really rather spend my life as a shepherd, away from the spotlight, rather than being the most famous person in history. The prophets teach us in Micah 6:8, what is it that God wants from you? Hatsneya lechet im ha'elokim, to do good and to walk privately, discreetly with your God. As long as man finds himself in need of recognition by his fellow men, he's in denial of the true perfection of man, which is recognition by God alone. A truly perfected man is concerned only with God's view of him, and not at all by how man views him. Insofar as he is in need of human recognition, he fails to approach God's recognition. How about Noah? It says about Noah, Et ha'elokim hitalach Noah. Noah walked with God. Noah was a man for over 100 years who was taunted and booed at and teased and made fun of and ridiculed. Did that bother Noah? No, not at all. Why? Because Noah was happy to be recognized by God. The true man of Torah knows human recognition and popularity is not only false, but the need for it is a distinct mark of human weakness. Every great Torah personality took into consideration before they acted only one thing. What does God think of this action? Never what will others think. They never thought, will I be more popular? Is this politically correct? Will this benefit me? Such consideration, which are the major considerations of our society, were not considered at all by the Torah personalities. They fled as much as they could from the public scene, as did Moses, until they were called upon, or perhaps coerced by the word of God, to accept a public role. The great sages of our Torah strived for a private life, and most were successful, emerging from private life only at certain times when it was absolutely necessary for the maintenance of Torah. The Gaon of Vilna, who was a man who lived only 200 years ago, lived a very quiet life. He had a very meager home, sparse furnishings, and all he wanted to do was spend his entire day, sit around the clock, studying Torah. And he emerged only when an opinion on a specific matter was absolutely necessary. Maimonides, until midlife, lived a very private existence. It was only with the death of his brother, the tragedy of his life, that he was forced to come out and take a public stand. And at the end of the Amidah, the end of the 18 blessings that we say every day, we end with the following: may God watch my tongue from evil and my lips from speaking lies. And to those who curse me, may my soul remain silent, and my soul shall be like dust to everybody. Our Torah recognizes that for true perfection, the proper environment isn't one of a public nature, but a private and withdrawn nature. Perfection is best attained when one avoids the false and the superficial values of man, which are rampant in the framework of human society, that breeds what modern people call success. The character of man that leads to perfection is his ability to denounce the values that people place on human recognition. Only he who has that ability can attain perfection, because that person can be concerned with the truth and truth alone. The Torah teaches us that woman is the one who has this ability to an even greater degree than a man. A woman is less concerned with false values based on what other people think. Man, on the other hand, is very concerned with his image in the world. It is the man who wishes to leave his mark in history. It is the man who seeks fame. But women, on the other hand, they're much more realistic. They are more concerned with the realities of life, with their home, with their children, with the well-being of their family. How often do we find that a businessman, after achieving financial success, is incapable of stopping? These guys can be working 24 hours a day. And he goes on with this incessant fantasy of being the empire building. And it is usually the wife who brings him back to reality. It's usually the wife who reminds him he spent no time with the children. It's the wife who says, this is nonsense. Take a break. The family needs you. Because nothing is to be gained by this preoccupation of making your mark in life. The woman, as God created her, is more naturally perfected. And in this respect, that is why Sarah could be a greater prophet than Abraham. Man by nature is the conqueror, and woman by nature is a much more realistic being. Man has to strive harder to reach this perfection that a woman has naturally within her grasp. The rabbis recognize this when they cite the prophets as referring to the great scholars as women. In Proverbs 8:71 we say, Aleichem ishim ekra. Scholars are called women. They were called women because they abstained from the manly art of conquest. But it is true, it is through their study and their Torah knowledge and being an example to others that they made great strides. The objection of this society to the role of the woman in the Torah society stems not from an accurate understanding of Torah,
but from a distorted value system. We have a beautiful statement in Deuteronomy. It says, it is not an empty thing from you. Now, it really should say, it is not an empty thing for you. But the rabbi's explanation is, this isn't an error at all. This is not an empty thing. But if you find it empty, it is because of you. You don't perceive the truth and the true value of Torah. If your value system is distorted, you will think that the Torah is distorted as well. When the Torah describes Sarah as being in her tent, this is by no means a degrading statement, but instead her greatest praise. The Torah is teaching that our mother Sarah wasn't concerned with the values of the outside world, but was content at home with the values of God. She was just as influential as Abraham in making people see the light of Torah. But there are two ways one can be influential. One, you can go out and you can actively recruit and actively teach, and in that way you influence people. Or the other way is simply through one's own perfection, being an example for others to learn from. This actually was the complementary role of Abraham and Sarah. Abraham brought the people to the recognition of God through active recruiting and teaching. When they came to Abraham's home and observed Sarah in her perfection, in her disinterest in the values of the outside world, a woman who was not trying to show off, but one who was in line with God's truth, happy with her life, then they learned by way of example, just by observing her. She was in her quiet, passive manner, unassuming, not searching for recognition. She made this indelible impression on people of what it means to have a contented life with Torah. The Torah realizes that in order to teach people, both roles are necessary. Since man's nature is more in line with conquest, while woman's is not, the Torah usually assigns the more active role to the man and the more passive role to the woman. However, the Torah demands that a human being be versatile and meet the challenge of different occasions in different ways. Sometimes the woman has to assume the role of the man, the more active role, as we see with Deborah and Esther. When this is so, the great woman of Torah rises to the occasion and assumes the role ordinarily occupied by the man. And the opposite is true. When the situation exists for him to play the more passive role, he too will go against his nature and assume the role occupied by the woman, as Mordechai and Barak. Which role is superior? Neither. The Torah demands that each of us use our own characteristics more in line with our nature to determine which role is demanded by us. We only have the prototype of the role of man and woman. That doesn't mean that each man and each woman are assigned to only one role. In terms of your absolute perfection, however, where society is not involved, the perfection of the individual on a personal level, the Torah makes it perfectly clear that the most perfected life is the lifestyle that is not in line with the conqueror, but the one that is reflected by woman's nature. What the Talmud states, the prophets refer to the great, to the scholars as women. The words of the prophet Micha ring loud and clear. Man has told you what is good. Man has told you the good is popularity, success, ostentatiousness. But what does God ask from you? Values to do justice, love, kindness, and work discreetly with God. Okay? Any questions? No? Have to let it sink in a little? Oh boy, my driver. Thank you.
Beneno woman the same as a Jewish woman?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. That's it. Good night.